We're going to be reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text number 13. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Oh, how nice, we're going to read about the mode of ignorance. Oh. Aprakasha pravitischa pramado moha evacha tamashyetani jayante Vibhrite Kuru Nandana Aprakasha Pravittischa Pramado Moha Evacha Tamasyetani Jayante Vibhrite Kuru Nandana. Translation: where there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, O son of Kuru, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested, purport. When there is no illumination, knowledge is absent. When in the mode of ignorance does not work by a regulative principle, he wants to act whimsically for no purpose. Even though he has a capacity to work, he makes no endeavor. This is called delusion. Although consciousness is going on, life is inactive. These are the symptoms of one in the mode of ignorance. Well, the mode of ignorance is acting not only in the human form of life, certainly in the human form of life, but in others. This seems to be focusing on the human form of life, like the other modes. Passion, great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, uncontrollable desire and hankering. So just focus on the human form of life. Darkness, inactivity, madness, and illusion, these four. Darkness, inactivity, madness, and illusion. The Prabhupada is speaking about the darkness, or where there's no illumination, having to do, he's connecting it to knowledge, where knowledge is absent. So, the presence of knowledge or the absence of knowledge, illumination and darkness. Not only there isn't, so in an individual who's influenced by the mode of ignorance, not having a proper understanding of what is to be done, or conversely, accepting what is not to be done as what to be done, and what is to be done is not to be done. Or genuinely just not knowing. We can say this is certainly a symptom in the age of Kali, where people in general don't know. And let's say the standard for transcendental knowledge begins with understanding the self. Not only you know, should I turn right or should I turn left, or what are the choices that I have, and what's the best choices out of the choices that I have? Just even more fundamental is, who am I? So most people don't stop to ask the question. They accept that which is given to them as who they are. Just share this a little bit. Something that I've been doing for a whole lot of years is making presentations at universities. So this semester, in America, the semester begins, it's after the summer comes the fall, season-wise. So summer's vacation time and fall is back to school time. So September is when colleges open. So the month of September, I'm a jumping bean. I go to so many different universities all over the United States, where there's already existing programs to help support and get the semester started with the program. So this the theme of the topic this semester was, nice title, something to do with individuality. Something individuality beyond the conformity game. Exploring or experiencing or something like that. Individuality beyond the conformity game. You know, because young people want to be, hey, I'm a nonconformist. I'm me. Ta-da. So, and they realize it's really difficult to be me because there's lots of pressure to be what's expected of you. And there's so many expectations, and part of it was exploring what those expectations are. What's the peer pressure and parental pressure and society pressure and things that are on, you know, the compete pressure. Acting simply because we don't want to get disapproval from sets of people that are important to us, so we just behave in ways. Anyway. But all of those, whether it's the conformist or the nonconformist by societal norms or measures, they're all in the category of ignorance. As far as, you know, the real self is concerned, the real self, the identity of the real self is the spirit spark, part and parcel of Krishna. We'll just start with the spirit spark, the spirit soul. That's the beginning of transcendental knowledge. Take the case of King Chitraketu, described in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, where a great virtuous king, very noble, loved by his citizens, because he was so religious, everything in his kingdom was abundant, his treasury was full, the people were happy, his military strength was powerful. Everything was very nice. Except for one thing, he was unhappy that he didn't have a son. And so he made different efforts to be able to have a son, and it wasn't meant to be. So he became very unhappy. He was so attached, religious, pious, virtuous king, who was so attached that when Angira Muni visited him, he didn't even bother. He didn't even try to give transcendental knowledge because he was too attached. So he gave him an opportunity to become smashed so that he could then hear transcendental knowledge. And he got smashed and he was able to receive transcendental knowledge. So the transcendental knowledge is making the distinction, understanding the distinction between the covering and the, you know, the upadis that go with, the designations that go with the covering, so the gross and subtle designations of covering, the different varieties of covering. That's ignorance. That's what's being spoken of here. Darkness. Darkness of ignorance. Like our standard prayer, Om Agyana Timirandasya. While I was standing in the darkness of ignorance, Gyananjana Salakaya, the spiritual master, came and has forced me to open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Chakshur Unmiritam Yena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. That's a fundamental dimension of knowledge or illumination. Removal of ignorance. Removal of the mode of ignorance. Removal of darkness. Forgetfulness of our real identity. One who tries to solve problems of life while staying in the bodily conception is only going to exacerbate the nature of the problems. There's no solution. There's no mitigation, even, of problems by applying the wrong conception of who we are. A conception of born of darkness. So illumination is its antidote. Knowledge removes ignorance, light removes darkness. Spiritual knowledge is essential. For moving out of the darker modes of material existence. So, when there is no illumination, knowledge is absent. One in the mode of ignorance does not work by a regulative principle. He wants to act whimsically for no purpose. So, upravati, inactivity. Sleep, indolence, laziness, lethargy, all of those similar sounding words. Just daydream, you know, something needs to be done, and you just dream about doing the something that needs to be done. Inactivity. So the contrast of the one who is situated in goodness, they not only know what is to be done, but they do what is to be done, and they do what is to be done in a regulated way. That's another feature of activity in the mode of goodness. It's done in a regulated way. I don't know, but just something that I remember learning as a young boy, maybe a little older than you. I had a little realization that if there's something that's good, if something that's like you know, brushing your teeth or something that's good, You should do it regularly. You know, a piano teacher teaches their piano student, you should practice regularly. Or the mridanga teacher will teach their student, you should practice regularly. I'll be your teacher, but we have a whole huge group of young devotees now in New York that have all learned by really, really good teachers, but they have a strict, they have like a, you know, have to mark a card and show that they practice so much each week so they can teach the boys the next lesson. Because they don't want students that aren't going to just sit in the class, take the lesson, and don't practice. They don't want, you can go play your drum in the kirtan without having any lessons. You can do that. We only want students that are going to... So practicing, even with something like that, music or a skill, typing on a typewriter, whatever it is, if there's some discipline that's involved and there's some value in the activity, then it's something that should be done regularly. And certainly with activities that are to be done, like, you know, religiously to be done, they're to be done regularly. Bathe regularly, rise early regularly, chant your rounds regularly, perform Mangal Arati regularly. Because the regularity diminishes passion and ignorance. That which disturbs the regularity is passion or ignorance. And so even if I don't feel like getting up in the morning, I get up in the morning. Even if I don't feel like whatever it is, because it's to be done, I do it regularly, that's a symptom of the mode of goodness. And the mode of ignorance is, I don't feel like it. Or, yeah, that would be a really good thing to do. And just, you know, lie there and... Some devotees were joking about the fact that there's systems whereby people that live remotely, they have a camera in the temple room so that they can see arti when arti is going on, the deity dressing. So some people lie in their bed and watch Mangal Arati. It's better than not lying in bed and not, you know, watching Mangal Arati, but it's not a symptom of the mode of ignorance. A little bit higher than just zonked out, but still a symptom of the mode of ignorance. So, inactivity, darkness, inactivity, madness. See what Prabhupada says about madness. That doesn't say anything. Although, this is the inactivity. Although consciousness is going on, life is inactive. Consciousness is going on because the soul is present. Madness, that's both an affective and a cognitive thing. Madness is the feeling of going mad. Like, you know, an emotion. And another madness is continuing to do something that's detrimental, experiencing the detrimental effect and continue to doing that something. It's madness. Like, you know, an addiction is an example of that. Something I know isn't good for me, and I continue to do it anyway. Now, there are some substances, alcohol or tobacco or some other things that are addictive. Drugs, addictive. But there are things that are not just like, because built within it, there's some addictive dimension to it. Just the very nature of material existence. It's harmful. We're expecting happiness, we get distress, and we keep doing it. And we all know the Albert Einstein one about this one. When you want a different outcome and you keep doing the same thing in the same way and you're expecting a different outcome. It's madness. We want a good result, but we don't want to change our habits or our lifestyle. The way that we approach life, we just want a different outcome. We want a better life without changing anything. Mode of ignorance. Madness. Foolish. And moha. Illusion. Mistaking what is not, this is the same, knowledge in the mode of ignorance. Mistaking that which is not to be real, and that which is real to be what is not. What is to be done is not to be done, like that, illusion. Accept that which is not the real thing to be the real thing. We know that, because this modes of nature chapter tells us that wherever one mode is there, other modes are also present. So I guess the good news is even when there's the mode of ignorance, there's some goodness, there's some passion, but predominantly ignorance. Or the other way around, when there's goodness, there's some passion, some ignorance. Let's look at that. So the position where there's goodness, but there's some passion, some ignorance. The goodness characteristics are elevation, illumination, compassion, sacrificing for others. Passion is to do those things with some fruitive intention. I have an expectation from this. And the expectation goes to me, or at least the egoistic conception of who I think I am, gross or subtle. I'll get some reward or get some recognition or something, some perks. And that's why the mode of goodness activity is being done. There, at least there's some element of that within it. And the mode of ignorance is rooted in the illusory conceptions of life, of what happiness is, who I am, what is actually beneficial for another person. It's there. As long as embodiment is there, as long as the modes of nature are active, it's there. Mode of ignorance. Just step back a little bit, just maybe not too far back, but some appreciation of all of this from the study of Sri Brahma Samhita that I have been doing. Pradhan. Pradhan is the sum total of all the material energy that's not yet differentiated or separated out into the different elements. Within Pradhan, there is the modes of nature are there. But the modes of nature are not active, they're dormant as much as the elements themselves are non-differentiated. The modes of nature are dormant. And there's no living entities in that dormant state. The living entities enter with the glance of Mahavishnu. But the modes of nature are there. So in this case, modes of nature act upon us, the living entity, the souls, to the agency of time. That is to say, time activates the modes of nature. Say it the other way around. Without time, the modes of nature may be there, but they're not doing anything. They're just there. So with the time energy, so then the modes of nature are now in this dynamic situation where they're competing. Sometimes this, sometimes that. Over a period of time, they may change. And they may change, or the variety may be according to the karma of the living entity. And the karma of the living entity isn't activated during the pradhan state. The karma of the living entity is also suspended within the body of Mahavishnu. The living entities are there in its susupti state. And so the modes of nature and the material elements are over there. And the living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu. With the glance of Mahavishnu goes living entities and the time energy. Sri Brahma Samhita says that that time energy has two elements or two components. Kriya Shakti, the force of activity, and Ichha Shakti, the potency of the Lord to carry out His will. Rama Devi, the internal potency, recognizing the intention of the Supreme Lord or the desire of the Supreme Lord, she entrusts that glance to Shambhu, who then carries this time energy that has Kriya Shakti, force of activity, and Isha Shakti, the Lord's desire, His desire potency, without which nothing can happen. So here's the good news, besides, you know, the material creation. You've heard this expression before within an instruction given by Krishna or given by the spiritual master as the potency to carry out that instruction. You've all heard that one, right? So that's Ichha Shakti. That potency to carry out the instruction is the will of Krishna. If it's the spiritual master, then it's still the will of Krishna delivered through the medium, the via medium of the spiritual master. It's the Ichha Shakti of the Supreme Lord. So it's the proper use of the Lord's Ichha Shakti to do what He wants. And He lists like the whole of Bhagavad Gita. He's giving this instruction because He has a desire. He has a desire to give illumination or self-realization, God-realization, spiritual perfection. He's calling the living entity back to Him. It's the purpose, it's the Ichha Shakti of the Lord's creation is to bring the living entities again to the stage of their relationship with Him. So we need Bhagavad Gita. We need the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. And within the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is the potency to carry out the instruction of the Lord within Bhagavad Gita. Ultimately, it's surrender unto Me. By surrender unto Krishna, the modes of nature, all three of them, can be surpassed and enter into the realm of Vishuddha Sattva. But at least when we're looking at material creation that's devoid of the submission to the Supreme Lord, like, you know, Hyderabad or any place where you go, there's the absence of submission to the Supreme Lord's will to a greater or lesser degree, largely it's to a greater degree, but then it manifests the modes of nature. And so one way of studying Bhagavad Gita is just walk around and see things through the lens of chapter 14. Here's different varieties of the manifestation of the modes of nature. Because that's what it is. Time is acting. The karma of the living entity is acting. The modes of nature are acting. And the living entity is being carried like on a machine. Thinking all kinds of ignorant things. Thinking independent. Thinking happiness. Thinking distress. Thinking pleasure. Thinking pain. Thinking love. Thinking loneliness. You know, all kinds of things. But it's but the illusory energy acting according to the modes of nature, and a very popular mode in the present age is the mode of ignorance. So darkness prevails, lack of illumination, indolence or laziness, even if one knows what to do, one doesn't do it in a systematic way. Illusion and madness, very strong. In Satya Yuga, it's much less strong. In Kali Yuga, it's strong and getting stronger. So that's to say that is not to strike fear in our hearts. It's to know our situation. Prabhupada gives this example. If a doctor is called upon to go into a place where there's an epidemic, what do? They take an inoculation to prevent them from succumbing to that epidemic, and then they go into the epidemic place and administer medicine. So, same for us. Hearing what these three, of course, mode of passion certainly is very strong, as well as the mode of ignorance is very strong. And we see little pieces of or little traces of goodness. It was many years ago, I don't remember how many, many, many years ago, there was a big billboard. When you go from New York City going west, there's a river, the Hudson River. You have to go under the Hudson River through a tunnel. Holland Tunnel is one of the tunnels. On the other side of the Holland Tunnel, there's huge billboard, like the most prominent one than other things. So one big billboard was up for some long time was, commit a random act of kindness. Like, you know, commit. It's like, you know, commit a crime or commit a sin or something like that. Commit a random act of kindness. Like in the months of amidst all of the passion of New York City and ignorance of New York City, let a little goodness every now and then appear. At least consider it. Commit a random act of kindness. Like that's a reasonable thing to ask a New Yorker. Or a Hyderabadian or whatever, you know. Somebody that's influenced by the modes of nature in our modern society. And it won't last long. And the rest will prevail. But the modes of nature are there. Where the whole chapter is leading is how the modes of nature are influencing every aspect of life. And Krishna concludes that without exception, all living entities are influenced by the modes of nature, but there are some who are freed from the modes of nature. So Arjuna asks, what are the symptoms? How are they to be known? And most importantly, how do you get there? How do you become free from the modes of nature? Stay tuned for the end of the chapter. Or just surrender to Krishna, make it very easy for yourself. Any comments or questions on text 13, chapter 14? Bhagavad Gita. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
I was thinking from Pradhan, bodies get generated. So it depends on the moods which a person predominantly is. Does it define the next body he will be getting? Because a mode
is one of the things that defines the next body.
Because mode of ignorance person, we thought.
What?
My understanding from third chapter, in different levels of covering, everybody is covered at different level. So my understanding was, a person in mode of ignorance gets a plant body, and maybe a passionate person in an animal body. Or so predominantly, it does not work like that.
There are plants in the modes of nature, there are animals in the modes of nature, there are humans in the modes of nature, passion, goodness, ignorance. So it's not just, that's not the only, if the mode of ignorance, you become a plant. That's not it. People become, in the mode of ignorance, become people in the mode of ignorance. There's, it's guna and karma, both. It's very complex. Okay?
I have one more question. So like you were mentioning about regulation.
Mentioning about?
Regulation.
Regulation.
So I was in practical life, like when we have children, it's...
Ah. What does that tell you? Don't have children. Or expect irregulation when you have children. They're like little balls of ignorance. All right. So what to do during that period of time? You take turns with your wife, you know, who stays up and gets unregulated the most. So one, you know, you share the responsibility. You do that, I bet. Yeah. And at a certain, you know, gradually, you know, they learn, you learn when their sleep habit becomes more regulated than it was when they were littler. Like that. Then you can do some devotional things and some other things. Some like that. Anything else? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, after listening so many things about Krishna consciousness and being in Krishna consciousness, and we know that this mode of natures are working.
Modes of nature are working.
Yeah. So, in practical way, till the time we are here in association of devotees, we are happy. But outside, as soon as we go, we forget Krishna, and too much struggle starts.
Too much?
Struggle starts.
Disturbance?
Yeah, struggle starts. How to remember Krishna, how to be always...
How do you remember Krishna when there's disturbance all over the place? That's your question? Is that your question?
No.
That's not your question. How do you remember Krishna when you're out of the association of devotees?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do like he does. Just stay in the association of devotees.
Maharaj,
it's a very nice color, isn't it?
Maharaj, but in my case...
He thinks I'm kidding. Go ahead.
So, like in my case, it is very difficult, like, to surrender Krishna. So, because I have many my previous karmas, they are forcing me to do all whatever I was carrying now.
Yes.
So, how to be strong and how to develop a faith that Krishna, like, whatever now I am struggling or whatever disturbance are coming in my life, still I can be Krishna consciousness. I can be in the association of devotees. like that shaking faith is there now. So
okay. How long have you been practicing Krishna consciousness?
Last 4 years for me.
4 years! You're a veteran. You should be able to answer this question. What is one of the very early instructions that Krishna gives about disturbance? Second chapter, one of his earliest instructions. It starts with matra. What does he say? You know the verse? Matra sparshas tu kaunteya sit kaushna sukha dukada agama payo nityas. What's the rest? Tang satiksha svabharata. Tang satiksha svabharata. What's your name? What is it?
Kiran.
Kiran. Kiran. Tang satiksha svatirava. What does tatiksha mean? What does tatiksha mean? Tolerate. What does it mean to tolerate? Ooh, it hurts, but I'll supposed to tolerate it. That's maybe a kind of neophyte tolerate. But tolerate means you withdraw consciousness here and you place consciousness over there. So what's the consciousness over here? Matra sparsha means senses contacting a sense object. It's not explicit, it's implied or implicit. Why am I bringing my senses in contact with a sense object? Answer: I want to gratify my senses. I want happiness by bringing my senses in contact with a sense object. It's only reasonable. Please don't blame me for being a human being. I want happiness, and so I bring my senses over to this object or to that object, and I live my life expecting happiness by contacting sense objects with my senses. I mean, insects do it, and birds do it, and beasts do it, and humans do it too. I'm expecting happiness. And what do I get? Distress. So, and the distress comes in two flavors. It appears to be sometimes hot. It appears to be sometimes cold. Duality, in other words. We're in the world of duality, and sometimes it's this and sometimes it's that. It's the nature of the place. We were, our GBC did something that we've never done before. We had a retreat. We institutionalized, during Prabhupada's time, I'll just share this with you. It's about, you know, trying to find happiness. Prabhupada established an annual general meeting for corporations. It has an acronym, an AGM, annual general meeting, where the corporation gets together, elects its officers, and it does its business. So, to plan our future, not just do business, we started having extra days of strategic, plan a better future, strategic planning. From corporate world, you probably know that term, strategic planning. So we've taken that on since 2007. So we now have a midterm meeting. It's now officially a GBC resolution. Whatever transpires at that midterm meeting, it doesn't have to be re-ratified at the AGM, because when the rules and regulations of the society were established, the GBC society, it says whatever is decided during the year must be re-ratified at the AGM. Now it says It doesn't have to be re-ratified. So it's like important. But we have a one-day meeting that was there for 14 days. Because there's committees and this and that, and, you know, planning, strategic planning stuff. And by the way, since we've been working at this since 2007, we've done, there's a lot of good work. And for 7 days, if you get an invitation from your leaders here, I don't know if you're planning to go to the ILS. He's going, no. International Leadership Sangha, where all this good work that probably 250 devotees from around the world have been working on for the past some number of years to, you know, help make our society go forward in a better way. They're invited to come to Mayapur and take part. We're expecting 1,000 devotees. It's a lot of work to prepare for all of that. So we took a little retreat at the end of those days. Only one day meeting with us was like planning a better future. It's nice, good balance. But it's exhausting. So a life member in Mahabaleshwara. You heard of that place? Madhya Pradesh, a hill station south of Pune. He owns a resort. So we went to, you know, he said, I'd like to host the entire GBC. You come here and free of charge, just, you know, take part in having a retreat. So we went there for 3 days. And the devotees from South India, and the devotees from Europe, and the devotees from North India all said the same thing. The weather here is very nice. And then it rained. And the owner of the place said that their annual rainfall is 300 inches of rain that comes within 100 days. So it's a resort place that rains an average of 3 inches a day. Average, 3 inches of rain. 3 inches, that's like this much rain every day. It's up on a hill station, so it doesn't flood. It all floods the people down below. But, you know, they go to resorts so they can get rained on. And he was explaining, you know, just down the hill, you can see there's a valley, and they get, you know, half of that, and over there they get half of that. But up here, it's this nice resort. It's nice, cool temperature, not too hot, not too cold. Yeah, nice. Lots of rain, lots of mosquitoes. You know, there's always something. Whatever it is. Find a place in this material world where there isn't duality and tell me about it. Please let me know when you find a place in this world that doesn't have duality. Every place has duality. And some of this and some of that. I wait a while and this turns into that. Dark turns into light. Summer turns into winter. Honor turns into dishonor. Pleasure turns into pain. So now, back to your question. What to do? That's your question. Because it's, you know, there's duality out there. A lot of it. I mean, in an absence of spirituality, lots of duality. You tolerate it, that is, rather than anticipating happiness there, withdraw that expectation of expecting happiness out there, because that's a fool's errand. And place your consciousness on sat. Withdraw consciousness from asat and place consciousness upon sat. You know the meaning sat asat, right? It's eternal, illusory, or temporary. Don't place your value of happiness and expectations of well-being in asat. Withdraw from there and practice, just keep practicing placing consciousness upon sat. And is it possible to do that in the world of duality? Answer, yes. Question, how? Answer, place your faith in Krishna's instructions, because within Krishna's instructions is the capacity to carry out his instructions. Question, really? Answer, yes, really. How so? Well, in the association of devotees that are practicing the world of sat, you come to for association of like-minded, spiritually minded personalities, and you find they're cultivating sat. You do chanting with them, you do hearing in Bhagavad Gita's message with them, you're building the fire of bhakti within. And you take that fire of bhakti into the world of asat, and you tolerate the world of asat while you're thinking, what are ways in which, how does Krishna describe what I'm just experiencing out here? Yeah, I can see. Here's great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrolled desire and hankering. Yeah, I get it. That's the mode of ignorance. You're seeing in a mood of detachment through knowledge. You're with Krishna. You're cultivating sat, connection with that which is real. And because you chanted your rounds very nicely that morning, and you've had nice programs at the temple during the week, that fire of bhakti is strong. And so you're thinking, well, you know, how can I not just protect myself from the onslaught of duality, but how can I interject sat within this place of asat? And you may not do it, but if you're, there's a very nice verse in Purport where Prabhupada has explained, if you're considering the ways to do that, you're given protection. Because you've withdrawn that expectation of happiness from the place where there's no happiness. But you've reposed that same consciousness of I wish to be happy in sat. You're cultivating sat in that arena of asat. And people that have really bought into the asat program, they're very determined to find happiness where there's no happiness, to find water in the desert. Even if they get something, it slips through their fingers very quickly, isn't it? Isn't it? Is that what you observe? That people that, even those people that are holding something that they call happiness, it slips through their fingers very quickly. Is it not so? Whatever it is, success, career, job security, peaceful family life, something, whatever it is, the electronic gadget they got by working hard and now they got one, then there's another one that's better, or this one breaks, or whatever, you know, whatever it is, it's this place of duality. There's no substantial happiness, there's no enduring happiness, and we all want that. It's not in that realm. So let go of the expectation for finding that which doesn't exist. It does exist in a different arena, different dimension. So practice like that. Withdraw from asat and invest in sat by proper means. In ignorance, we are not able to keep faith. So, this is a how-to question. How does one come to understanding that within instruction there is power to execute it? Well, you practice executing and you'll come to realize the power is there. And if you don't execute, you'll never realize it. It's a nice, you know, theoretical understanding. The scriptural understanding I just presented, but the practical realization requires doing, taking the instruction, placing it in your heart, and go forward. Taking the instruction within your heart doesn't mean obstacles just disappear. Obstacles still are at least apparently there. But the power to carry out the instruction is then realized by trying to carry out the instruction, not on your own strength, but on the strength of the instruction itself. Okay, that's the same question. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai ho. By the grace of the Srila Prabhupada, it's great for us to have your divine association this evening.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Prabhuji.
And by His grace, you're here too.
Prabhupada.
So now.
And Prabhuji, before asking you some question, I just bring out my experience today in the morning.
Okay.
While I'm heading to this satsang over here,
yeah.
I was coming from a public transport.
Okay.
I was towards the window seat.
Okay.
And my bus has stopped somewhere else.
Okay.
I just had a glimpse around this surroundings, and used to observe to the other side of the road there was a huge traffic.
Huge traffic.
The traffic was completely jammed.
Oh, jammed.
I just peeped out of the window and used to see around hundreds of vehicles. There I've got some thought in my mind. Why are these people standing over this road, waiting such much, wasting much of their energy,
yeah.
their wealth, their time, everything in waiting in traffic.
Yeah.
The thought was running in my mind, and to my left side, one of the passenger, he was reading newspaper. It has a headline giving the news about the accident happened the previous day, which has taken around 40 souls of the body. Other thought came again into the mind. Why these people, they know that they are going to die. And even they know that they are going to die, why aren't they able to accept it? Why it ran a lot? And when I came to here, half of my question has been answered in the satsang.
I thought you were going to tell me the person in front of you and the person behind you were also like donkeys, just doing things without even knowing why they were doing things.
And I just
it's the world in which we live.
Yes.
It's the world in which we live. Persons seeking happiness where there isn't. And they keep doing it.
And what I thought is, why these people aren't able to accept it? And the answer is ignorance.
Yeah.
Half of my question has been answered in the satsang.
So here's the other half.
Other half is, why ignorance? Why the ignorance has...
We choose it.
That's
pretty ignorant, isn't it? We choose it. We could choose something other, but we keep choosing ignorance instead of knowledge. Give the ignorant person knowledge. As the saying, Prabhupada would quote a saying in the Bible, don't cast your pearls before swine. Like, Angira didn't give transcendental knowledge to King Chitraketu because he couldn't have received it. So we try to, at least for our, and within our own lives, try to take that which will carry you out of that state of ignorance, knowing it's pervasive and the atmosphere in which I find myself is toxic with ignorance. So I'm prone to the same thing, even I see it all around me. So let me choose knowledge. And so you've come. So keep coming. And then take that knowledge. Now this is your question. Take that knowledge and bring it inside. And then so the light goes out. I mean, from the inside it goes, and you can see through the light of knowledge. Jnana Chakshusha. Right? Same. Jnana Chakshusha. Or Shastra Chakshusha. And then, although the place is in darkness, you're situated in illumination. It's a choice we make. And so, again with those things that are good, do them regularly. Let me ask you a question. How often do you come here?
Once in a week, Prabhuji.
Once in every blue moon?
Once in a week.
Once in a week, okay. Come more regularly. Even though there's all that traffic and, you know, get some illumination. Come regularly. And there's some people here, they really want illumination, so they stay here and then they go out and work and come back. Isn't it? You can consider that. But get, you know, stand next to light and you get light. Stand next to fire, you get warm. Stay in a place where there's, bring, you know, make arrangements in your life so that there's an opportunity for goodness or the alternatives to ignorance and passion, and your life will become like that. Okay, thank you, Srila Prabhupada Ki.